This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow.
And I'm Bill Nye.
Bill, if your experience in growing up is anything like mine, and perhaps most people, mom was always considered the center of the household, right?
In my case, sort of. when I was very young, my mom was the center of the household. But then she went on to get a master's degree and a doctorate. And my dad did a lot of the show running later on.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about that because my next guest, Paul Rayburn, is chief media critic for the Knight Science Journalism Tracker at MIT. And full disclosure, he also serves on the board of Science Friday Initiative, which produces our program.
Wait a minute.
Good, good to see you back again, Paul.
Nice to be back. Bill, thank you.
Is his experience typical if we're fathers are part of raising the kids?
It's not typical, but as it happens, that happened in my family, too. My mother worked nights, and my father would make us dinner every night during the weeknight, so it was quite different. So neither Bill nor I is therefore able to comment on anything.
Because my father showed me how to turn an egg, make a fried egg. I still have the very same skillet.
Right. Hmm. But it, of course, as we all know, in the 60s and 70s, it was the usual situation was for the fathers to be gone all day and mothers to be home, leave it to Beaver scenario.
Well, I would say that in my case, they were both gone all day. Mm-hmm. That was my deal.
You point out in your book, and I thought this was so surprising, and I can almost see the surprise on your face about when you did research for the studies about parenting, that fathers are not even included in the research that people are doing about parenting. And I'm going to quote from your book. No one had seen the importance of fathers because the investigators had never looked for it.
Right. So I think what happened, through most of the 20th century, there were two things that happened. Fathers were away working in most families. Mothers were home. The other thing that happened was the arrival of something called attachment theory from the British psychologist John Bowlby, whose idea was that attachment and bonding between mother and child in the first hours and days and weeks was critical for child development. So we had those two things, and it turns out neither of those was based on much.
Bride of Frankenstein when she looks at him.
Exactly.
She's imprinting.
Right.
I saw it.
Yeah, it happens. It happens in Frankenstein, but not so much in American families. And so people were looking at things as they were and saying, here are the reasons why they are this way. If you take a little bit longer look, as we do on science radio shows, and you go back to the 19th century, families were not that way at all. Families lived on farms. Kids helped out as soon as they were able. They spent a lot of time with their fathers and their mothers. So this was a sort of a 20th century aberration with the fathers away and the mothers home.
Mm-hmm. And fathers, you write that if your father smoked tobacco before you were born, how did that affect people?
Smoking would give kids an increased risk of obesity. The father who was obese, his kids would have an increased risk of obesity. And we can understand if, say, a mother gained a lot of weight during pregnancy, and then it turned out that put her kids at risk. We'd say we get that, but fathers gaining weight, there's no direct connection. So it's a little mysterious, but very interesting.
Sounds like diet and lifestyle. Thank you. Brilliant.
Well, not only what they eat, but interestingly, you point out research about a father's mental state before and during his partner's pregnancy. That also affects the kids.
So prenatal depression, which is more common in men than most of us have realized, gives that child an increased risk of depression throughout its life. Now, we know that if a father has genes that predispose
him to
depression.
These are facts. These are data.
These are facts, right? So there's lots of the speculation is
cause
when you come to why it's like this, right? But these are facts. So the risk is higher, and it's not just genes that the father passes on to his kids. Mm-hmm. It's something about that period. The risk is higher, even higher, if the father is depressed in the prenatal period. So when he has no connection to the fetus.
Right.
Okay,
here's the speculation.
Good,
those are the facts. Speculation is something he's doing is affecting the behavior of the mother, and that in turn is affecting the fetus. I'm glad you're pushing me on this because I really tried in the book to separate the facts from the
speculation. He has collected all the data. That's interesting. One of the interesting aspects of all the data he's collected that no one has collected.
And this sounds
weird.
I mean,
the research that should have been done. He's pointed out what hasn't been done. It's really the studies that have not been done to prove the science.
When it comes to babies, there are two sets of genes there, right? Did I miss something? There's a man and a woman that create a baby. You'd think they would have studied the man a little bit, yeah?
Right. Well, you know, as I say, it's one of those quirks. And I think people got so attached to the attachment theory. And you know
well,
how that works. Scientists
yes.
get stuck.
They get
stuck. Well,
we all do. So let me ask you this. Now, anecdotally, I don't want to put you gentlemen on the spot. But my understanding is that when women are pregnant, they are very interested in sex. And I've heard reports, I won't say from whom, by guys who kind of get worn out, like 6 months of just going at it. And so I wonder if I've also heard reports from people who did not experience that. Right. Is that folded into your thing?
I didn't run across
the physical relationship.
I did not run across studies on that. What I did find that's akin to that. So mothers' bodies go through all kinds of hormonal changes during pregnancy, and that may explain speculation here. That may explain what you're talking
about. Well, my evolutionary belief is they do that so that after the baby is born, the guy's had enough interactions where he's okay to take a break.
Well, here's what happens in the guys that is pretty new stuff, and it was a surprise to me. Men go through a lot of hormonal changes during their partner's pregnancy. Testosterone falls. Men get a rise in prolactin, which is associated with nursing in women. I didn't know we had prolactin.
Yeah, I didn't know.
And all these changes, and the thinking is that the individual, the father, is changing from a competitive, aggressive mate seeker, which he is early in maturity, to a nurturing figure who can take care of the kids.
Well, but you also point out that the father has to be around the mother.
That's right.
For this to happen.
That's right.
It's not
have data on that?
It's statistical
studies.
We don't know the cause.
Measure pheromones.
It's not a cause and effect. Pheromones is one of the bits of speculation, absolutely.
Yeah. How does you talked about the mental state? You spend a lot of time in how the mental state is affected in the fetus,
right?
How does that filter down into a fetus in the mental state?
The mental state of the father.
Yeah.
Well, as I was saying earlier, it's probably because he's affecting the behavior of the mother. But it's interesting. One of the first studies,
which in turn affects the
fetus, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the first studies I found was a study linking depression in mothers to depression in their children that was done up the street at Columbia. Mm-hmm. And so I called the researcher, and there was no mention of fathers in the paper. I said, what about fathers? Because you could imagine a very warm father might mitigate that a little bit. A harsh father might make it worse. She goes, well, we didn't look at fathers. I said, well, but. She goes, I don't really want to have this conversation. We didn't look at fathers. That's it, you know. And that's the mindset, you know. Right. Now, subsequently, there have been several studies looking at fathers, and it turns out if fathers are warm and involved with their children, they can mitigate the effects of postpartum depression in a mother.
You know, it's almost like hearing you talk about it, it reminds me of the days when Masters and Johnson's book came out about human sexuality, and everybody was shocked. It would be shocked today to say, you know, we never asked these questions.
Right.
No one ever asked any of these questions before. It was always about the mother.
Yeah, that's right.
And now you might say, as you're pointing out, gee, how come we left out all the research on the father?
And
just the way people did it? That was just the mindset?
That was the mindset. Now, it's been a couple of decades now people have started to get into this, and there's now a lot of research, and I try to put as much as I could in the book, but it's another one of those things that happens in science. It's all published in journals that reporters don't normally see and that nobody outside the field sees.
And they're hard to read.
They're hard to read, and so we don't know. So this created a great opportunity for me to write a book because this stuff was here and most people don't know about it.
Let me ask you this. Based on this, what you've learned, do you have recommendations for everybody in the world?
Yeah, I know what you're going to say when I say this. You're going to say, we had to do research to find that out, because the recommendation is, there are a lot of particulars. There's a lot of stuff in the book and a lot of things that have implications for fatherhood. But when you get right down to it, one of the really important things fathers can contribute to their kids is a warm, you know, an involved relationship.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew you were going to be unhappy with this, but I plowed ahead. That's the case. The other thing that's important is that the father and the child have a give and take. So if father plays with the kids a lot, but always, you know, picks the game that they play and sets the rules and that sort of thing, that's not as good as if there's give and take. You know,
and
my
example. This isn't just this is, you jamming.
Right. No, this is there's data on this that warmth and that exchange is important. Mm-hmm. And so what I like to think of it is, you know, sometimes, you know, I let my 4-year-old cheat on chutes and ladders. You know, right. I let him skip right. the chute. And so what that does, it has long term consequences, epidemiology, data, but not cause and effect. But the correlation is that those kids are more socially at ease, even as adults.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Paul Rayburn, author of Do Fathers Matter? What Science is Telling Us About the Parent We've Overlooked. And this being Father's Day, this is a book you might want to pick up at a bookstore to gift everybody else. I don't know. Right. Do you find that fathers are learning as much from reading this book?
I think fathers have learned a lot. I've got a lot of response
who else
from
is
fathers
it for?
And fathers' websites. Well
fathers may say, I knew this. Are the fathers saying, I could have told you this if you had asked me?
Fathers say, I knew they were wrong when they said I wasn't involved with my kids, especially younger
really?
Fathers. They want to be involved, and they are more involved than I think fathers were a generation ago. They don't know the particulars. They don't know all these things about why that's important and exactly what they're doing when they're mm-hmm. playing with their kids.
Now, you were a father at two different ages.
Right.
We've known each other 40 years.
Right.
You know,
right.
Is there a difference in fatherhood that you talk about? In different ages.
You know, there's fathers continue to have roles with their kids even as adults. I think that, you know, my experience with that has been that, you know, I raised my first three kids who are grown now, and they've all turned out great. We have a great relationship, and I've been very fortunate in that regard. And so now I have my two little kids, 7 and 4. And, you know, so people come up to me and they say, so, you know, it must be great. You know what you're doing now.
Exactly.
Right. So the short answer is, yeah, it's great. You know, the real answer is I'm making some of the same darn mistakes all over again.
My brother says all the time, you just fake it. You got to fake it.
And another thing you talk about is how fathers play with their children.
Right.
Which is different.
Right. So I talked about that a little with the give and take and so forth. But, you know, fathers will do more open-ended things, play without rules, roll around on the floor. This, I think, is one of the few pieces of father research that most of us know about.
Mm-hmm.
People have heard that fathers play differently. That was actually discovered in the late 70s by a person named Michael Lamb, psychologist in England, who somebody had to go and ask that question and look for it. And he was one of the real pioneers in the 1970s,
not the 1770s.
Right, right, yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's recent that people have done this.
It's amazing. Talking with Paul Rayburn, Do Fathers Matter? On Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International, here with Paul Rayburn and Bill Nye. So what was the most, you know, it's a question you always ask a guest. What is the most surprising thing? And you did a lot of research about this.
Well, I think the surprising thing, I would have been fine if I'd discovered that there, you know, play and, you know, hormonal changes and a few things that, you know, were important in fatherhood. And it might have been a magazine article, not a book.
Right.
But everywhere you look, you find evidence of this bond. I mean, overall, the surprise is there's this incredible bond between fathers and their kids. You know, I mean, there are all kinds of examples. James Swain, who's a psychiatrist at the University of Michigan, put fathers in scanners, and he let them listen to babies' cries, awful obnoxious sounds he could find, and their own babies cry. And their brains lit up differently when they heard their own baby cry. Now, there's a long way to go from there and mapping out what's happening, but some of the changes looked like they were, you know, invigorating emotional centers in the brain and so forth. So it looked like what you would expect, you know, that the father was biologically prepared to respond. Now, that's not such a shocking thing, but that you can put somebody in a brain scanner and actually find differences is pretty cool.
Well, that it's been selected for in evolutionary history.
It's been selected for. You know, family grouping started to appear, I don't know, 1.5 million years ago. And there's a reason why they stuck around, you know. Yeah. So because, you know, it was better for the offspring.
But, I mean, my dad had a profound effect on me. I talk about him all the time. And as my brother points out, who has 4 kids, there's no such thing as quality time. There's just time.
Right. I think that's right.
And this is your open-ended idea, right?
Right. Quality time was something we invented, you know, to make ourselves feel better if we didn't have much time to spend with our kids.
So. Mm-hmm. You're right about the Akka tribe. Is that how you call them?
Akka
tribe,
right.
in Africa, and how their parenting style differs from our own.
Right. I call them the best fathers in the world. And it's a situation where the families are together almost all the time. They go out and set nets to trap game for food. The kids go along, and as soon as they're able, they help set the nets. In the evenings, the fathers work on repairing the nets, and the mothers work on that too. The kids help when they can. And what I thought was fun was that the, you know, in the evenings, the men get together to drink palm wine and talk over the day, you know, as we might go to a TGI Fridays or something and talk over the day. But they take their kids with them, you know, so they sling them on their hip. And how do I put this delicately? If the kids have an accident when their fathers are holding them, fathers grab a leaf and wipe it off and clean up the baby and keep talking. Now, they don't focus on the kids. The men talk to each other, but the kids are there. So it's
just the time.
Just the time. They're within, I think 47% of the day, they're within a yard of their children, within arm's reach, basically. So they're just there. And Barry Hewlett, who has studied these people, he was so fascinated by them. He now has a house there and spends time there every year in Central Africa. But he says they don't have to tickle their kids. They don't have to engage in a lot of stimulation. They're so close that they can just communicate, and the kids know how loved they are, you know. So really interesting.
It's take a son to work day every day.
All the time. All the time. Yeah, exactly.
And it does. Fathers do matter.
Fathers matter. Fathers matter. Fathers,
Has anybody done brain scans on these people and looked at their hormone levels, blood samples and stuff like that?
No, nobody's looked. The question would be, would we find differences if we did that? And it would, that would be very interesting to see.
Topic of the second volume.
Right.
If you're out there, he needs funding. He needs funding.
Right.
Paul Rayburn, book is Do Fathers Matter? What Science is Telling Us About the Parent We've Overlooked. Published this weekend.
Published about a week ago.
About a week ago.
Yep. Published. It's out there.
Father's Day. Right. Perfect book of Father's Day. Paul Rayburn is chief media critic for the Knight Science Journalism Tracker at MIT. A terrific book for Father's Day. Thank you, Paul, for coming
in. Thanks very much, Evan. Thanks.